related to the topics for the speakers. And we have another about 15 minutes or so for questions and discussion. In the interim, since we have just a minute or two, I'll take advantage for just a minute and put a bit of a touch on what Daphne had to say very briefly about taking advantage of our local environment here. And also taking advantage of the movement that Richard Louv had started. We are working locally in the Bay Area to implement more of a parks prescription type program. And for people who may be interested in getting active in that or participating in this, you're welcome to come up to Daphne or myself at any time after this. So this question was addressed to Stacy, but I think it could be picked up by any of you all. So I can see how kids get into the farm once they've been there, but how do you initially incentivize them to get involved?
Oh. You mean to actually attend the program or to actually want to go to a farm? Okay.
I think your interpretation would be as good as mine.
Okay. So, the interesting thing is that most of the kids in the surrounding area, this whole green movement's happening, and these kids are getting it in school. But a lot of these kids, it's a fourth-generation Dutch farm, so it's a family farm. So many of these kids came to the farm to feed the animals when they were, like, a year old. So they have a really warm remembrance of that experience. And so now it's an opportunity for them to come back. So when the parents are like, oh, we really want you to check out this program that's called the Health Barn, and they're like, oh, it's at Adams Farm? Oh, okay, I'll check it out. And then during our stuff year-round, and then during our summer camp programs, we get a lot of, this is the first year we started busing kids out of New York City, and as you know, there's a huge movement, and kids are really into nature, and they don't really get it in an urban environment, so it's not such a hard sell, because kids, if they want to plant or they want to cook, that's really what we're selling, is planting and cooking, not nutrition education. And then we're just being transparent about calling it Health Barn, so when they get there, if it was called the Fun Barn, then they would think they got duped. But it's the Health Barn, so they know that they're going to be eating cool things. They do eat dark chocolate. But they're not surprised by what they eat at the Health Barn. And I think that's really important with kids. You need to be transparent. You can't surprise them, trick them into doing this.
I'm going to bring some other questions in because we have limited time, so instead of everybody getting a chance to comment on all of them. And I want to remind all of you, too, that we have a fantastic final speaker. Please, if you're itching for a stretch, stretch, but do come back. For Oscar, how do you make these classes, gardening classes, mandatory for low-income families since many don't go to classes normally to begin with?
So those classes are not mandatory, they're voluntary, and we recruit parents from the two biggest elementary schools we have in our community, but the classes are open to any family in the Canal neighborhood.
This one is great. So, hey, Stacy, how can we clone you?
I actually would like to make a comment there because I don't know how many are familiar with the Child Nutrition Act that's on the table right now, which is on the surface a wonderful idea because it really does get at everything we're talking about today in terms of linking schools more with local farms and trying to give more funding to school lunch so that kids can have healthy food throughout the school day, which is something we didn't touch on, but is also a very important part of this. And so that is something that's really important that's on the table. Unfortunately, the actual dollar amount translates to about 6 cents per meal per child for school lunches, and not a terribly much more in terms of actually, you know, the funding per child for the other programs. But it's going to stand for a lot in terms of putting this on the table and saying that our kids need to be exposed to healthier foods throughout the day, and make it, pave the way for more schools to have Stacy clones. and that's the place where physicians can really get involved, is in pushing through. It's right now it's been stalled. I don't know if anybody has been following it, but I'm happy to talk to you more about it if you like.
This one could be for the panel. Sustainable living is time consuming. Buying, cleaning, chopping, cooking vegetables, nurturing, playing with, bathing, clothing children, keeping the house clean with low-impact cleaners. Who does this work? It interferes with the time needed for creativity and work involvement. How should we share this burden?
I'm going to start. That's why I love kids, because they would never ask that question. They just kind of do it because it makes a lot of sense. So what I would say is that we have to change the channel, because we're all on the wrong channel. If that question was asked, which I know it's a lot of the parents I deal with, they're completely on the wrong, well, they're actually probably watching way too much TV. But I would just say shut the television off and you'd have a lot more time to do things that you couldn't imagine. And then I think the other thing is that, you know, a lot of the parents think it's all about them, the cooking, it's this control thing. But if you involve your kids and you make it more of an activity, I mean, there are so many kids that would actually prefer to cook the meal. I mean, they don't like the way their parents cook. They don't like the way things taste. And, you know, what we do is we have a whole collection of recipes that are kid-tested, and we say, you know, empower the kid. We take them right through it. And on Thursday nights, it's their night to cook. So it doesn't have to be the burden of the family. It should be, okay, we have a family, we have an environment, we have a family, and who's going to do what? Okay? And I honestly, if you tell kids that you're going to separate the garbage and you're going to do recycling, I don't think you're going to have a problem about it. It's just been my experience. So I think what happens is, and I always talk about this, is that I don't have children, and I think that's why I'm so successful with them, because I don't bring any bias to the table. I believe that every kid will succeed. I believe that every child will eat a fruit or vegetable. And if you talk to the parents, the first thing they'll say is, oh, my kid's not going to do that. But, oh, they'll never eat that. And I don't have that attitude. I really believe that every child, given the opportunity, will eat a vegetable.
If parents don't feel stress and that happens, with a changing the food environment would be something that would help them too. In the meantime, what we're doing is providing them ideas, easy ideas, so they can learn at least, and taking the first steps to this food environment change that we are trying to promote. Some of the ideas we promote is easy recipes, cooking local seasonal fruit and vegetables. This is something that helps them, and when they cook in family, when they have an idea of how to do it, sometimes we do in the workshops, this is not something that we hand out to family. We have to do it with them. When you see something, when it's made with you, the chances are that it's going to happen. In the past, we were handing information and brochures, but the most effective way is to give the information at the same time we're doing. We learn by doing, especially our parents in our community. That's what we have learned.
I absolutely agree. One of the panelists earlier talked about green hospitals and how the way she's able to sell them is by explaining that they're also the most cost-effective way of building. And I think it's really the same with all of this. When you change the paradigm and explain to families that this is a way to become a family again, this is a way to make your children smarter and succeed in school, this is a way for you to connect with your partner, your loved ones, to become healthier, to be joyful, to feel good in your skin, then all of a sudden it's not an extra job at the end of the day. It's not like you go to work and then you have the rest of your life or whatever. It is, it, this all becomes your life. And it really can be very integrated. And I think that's the most important message to give to folks. I know whoever asked that question was being a devil's advocate, and I appreciate the opportunity to be able to answer it. So.
This next question has a phrase preamble, which I think is a very important thing to think about. Ed asked me, he says, please address the elephant in the room. How do we address the power and profit motive of the Monsantos, the ADMs, the McDonald's, the PepsiCos, and the others in the world? That's up to you guys. Come on.
Well, I actually worked on the dark side. I did public relations for like major food and pharmaceutical companies before I started Health Farm. So I think through education, and I think it's not preaching, it's by doing. So the more we do in our community, people, you're leading and you're showing people a different way. And, you know, you kind of, there is advocacy, there's opportunities on every level. It's a machine, I will tell you, and it's powerful and it has money and it's very active in Washington and there's a lot of people behind it and it's kind of, I mean, one person can't go up against it. You have to really, you know, if that's a passion you really want to go after that, you got to get involved in advocacy. But I think the more we educate parents and we understand that when they vote with their fork, you know, people are, what they do is when they go in there and their buying power is being monitored. And the same thing with farmers. Like, I work on a farm with farmers, and, you know, we talk about this all the time because Health Farm's organic, and they're not. And they're not spraying herbicides, but they're certainly, and they're not, you know, I'm not upset by their practices. Would I prefer them to be organic? Absolutely. But this is a fourth-generation farm, and I'm like this girl from New York that shows up, and I'm going to tell these people how to farm. And it's a process, and they watch what happens, and their market had trans fats in their goods, and then they started taking our classes, and, you know, Mr. Admiral was upset that the donuts weren't as crunchy as they were before, but they felt like, and they had to source, it's really easy in California to source, like, the pie crust and all that stuff, but on the East Coast it's not, so they had to get a different company coming in, but these things can happen, and they can change, and you don't have to beat people over the head about it, you just have to lead by example, and they eventually, like, come around, and they're like, well, wait a minute. I'm like, trans fats cause heart disease, like smoking causes cancer. Like, what are you doing? And they're like, yeah, that makes sense. So, I mean, are people still buying their donuts? Absolutely. But, you know, it's those kinds of things where we can make a difference, and you have to make a difference at your local level because that massive machine isn't going away.
Yeah. Positive role models have a great influence on people. And that's what we promote, healthy messages and positive role models. And I said that when you do high control degree, that's a work sometimes. So when we, in our workshop with the parents, we always spread the positive message. What are the benefits of that, of a healthy behavior, eating more fruit and vegetables, doing more physical activity? What are the benefits? That's what we're promoting, and it's been very successful.
I think that it can happen on a local level and on a larger level. I don't know how many of you have read of some of Vandana Shiva's work. She's an Indian food activist, an amazing woman. And if you want to have, you know, read some uplifting stories, It's worth it to read some of the work that she's done in India and stories she tells around the world. But just the fact that in the past 7 years, we've increased the number of small farms by 20 to 30%, the fact that words like local or vote with your fork are now not just becoming terms that you say here in the coastal cities, but I was in Louisville yesterday talking at a large, large conference, and many people there did not know who Michael Pollan was, and yet they were coming up and telling me about fresh and local and what they were doing. A lot of them were from little towns around in Kentucky and Cincinnati and were just interested in hearing about the topic. So things are changing, and it's slowly, and yes, the Monsantos are not going to go away. They're like some giant hydra that will just kind of morph to whatever we allow it to be. Oh, if you can do packaging this, if we can buy, you know, the GMO rights for that. But it really, as I agree, is a matter of, you know, finding the positive and continuing to support it. And it will, things are changing.
You know, the image I had in mind as I was thinking about this question is so many of the cypress trees, the redwoods, not so much the redwoods, they're not in the granite, but if you're in the Sierras or if you're taking hikes in the Bay Area and you see some of these trees growing directly into sedimentary rock, granite rock, there's nothing that's going to stop them. They can get through any hard surface and find what they need to nourish themselves, and we can do the same thing, whether it's our small local level or whether it's getting involved in larger advocacy. So we have about 2 minutes. We'll do one more question and then we'll wrap up. And I like this question because it brings in topics about how we deal with the wide ages of childhood and adolescence. And I think this could be for the group, though it's addressed to Stacy. Could you describe some of what Health Barn is doing with older kids, particularly adolescents?
So we start as young as three. We call them the seedlings, the 3 to 5 year olds. They're really funny when they come in. And then we have a Sprouts program, 5 to 7, and we have a Harvesters, 8 to 12. And those are more of our train wrecks. Those are really hard, but you almost see it if it's not fixed. If some of the issues, like I was saying, the picky eaters and all the sensitivity issues, if they're not really handled at the seedlings level, they don't get better. And then for the adolescents, we have the Harvesters. And then we just introduced the Teens in the Kitchen. So it's the Teens in the Kitchen program, which is pretty exciting. We learned that because we had 15-year-olds and older that were now wanting to come to Health Barn. And I didn't really want to do a Teens program until I knew what it was, what it was going to be. And I usually get my ideas from the community. So we're able to teach. They'll come because it's cooking, but of course we're going to teach nutrition too. But it's camouflage. No, I'm only kidding. But I mean, we're cooking with whole grains. I mean, there's all different introductions. And I find that what's so exciting about the teens, because they're a new group for me, is that they're so willing and wanting to make healthier choices. Because a lot of these kids, you know, especially the girls, they're not educated on nutrition, and they want to be thin. And they just stop eating, or they pick up bad habits from other kids. And there's lots of boys. I've had these unbelievable athletes that get referred to me because they're going pro hockey and they don't know how to eat. And so if, you know, food is fuel, and you know, you just have to basically. I have a sports nutrition workshop, so I'm customizing it for my audience. So I get the sports crowd in there too, like, you know, eat pregame versus the day you're. There's game day and there's like workout day. I have all this stuff. But essentially it's the same message, and it's just how you deliver it, because you'll lose them. I mean, I know nutrition can be, you know, so different, but delivery and making it fun and relevant is so important. And sometimes, especially as health professionals, we're so used to talking to each other that we forget who we're talking to, and you have to be aware, like, if you're going to get them to glaze over or not, and kind of how to bring it back. But I think the most important thing with nutrition is we never teach nutrition without eating. And if you know anything about nutrition in schools, they don't have food. I mean, and I hear, oh, it's costly and it's a pain in the butt to prep, and I'm like, whatever. Even our assembly is like, we bring in food. We bring in food, and it's a huge, giant cocktail party for kids, and Whole Foods gives us the food for this. And, you know, I get such resistance, like, well, what about allergies and blah, blah, blah. But then you get those parents in there. You got to get these champion parents that really make it happen, because there are parents, there are principals. I mean, they're starting. They're not a ton of them. But once you get those people and you get those sparks, you can really make inroads where you need to do it.
Thanks, Stacy. And thanks, Oscar and Beth. So for, you guys have been very patient. For 5 to 10 seconds, let's have everybody just stand up, take a quick breather, a stretch in any way you like. But don't go outside.